Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey friends, welcome to Someone Who Isn't Me, episode number 23. Those of you that are so inclined will know that 23 is obviously an auspicious number, and it's very fitting that the guest on this one is Andrew WK. His new album, You're Not Alone, is out actually today. It's the day that I'm recording this intro and also uploading the podcast, and today is the 2nd of the 3rd, so it seemed fitting. So over the years, I've interviewed Andrew quite a few times and we've hung out a little bit and I've gone to see his shows and we've chatted afterwards. And I've always found that there's something that resonates with me about his music and him as a person, which isn't always apparent, I think, on first listen. But there's definitely something amongst everything that he does with such passion as well. I mean, you could say it's positive energy and positivity and PMA, etc. But I feel like there's more to it than that. And I think that when you listen to the new album, You're Not Alone, you'll be able to hear it. And if on first listen you don't hear it, maybe this conversation will help you to see that a little clearer. Because there's definitely something that moves within his work, which is beautiful. We got to hang out recently when he was in London. He was doing press for the album and he came into Radio 1 and we did an episode of Music Ruined My Life, which was really good. We also had the chance to hang out when I got to host his album playback and Q&A. And I think that was, there was a feeling on this trip that you could tell that aside from the fact that he was obviously here to promote this brilliant new album that he's got, that there was, there's definitely been a shift in the overall perception of him as an artist. And I think that's been a long time coming. So when we got to hang out and do this episode, we discussed just that, essentially, that I've long held this feeling that he is a truly great artist, and that gets overlooked sometimes. But when we got into it, the first thing I wanted to speak about was the album cover painted by Julie Bell and Boris Vallejo, and we discussed that a lot because obviously that was the first thing that made its way out for people to see was the album cover. It's a beautiful painting and there's a lot going on with it, so we discussed all of that. There was a couple of things that I wanted to talk about in the album artwork as well, but I didn't want the whole conversation to dwell on the fact about this album cover. But there was stuff about the only two things that you'll see on the cover in the sky is Saturn, and Saturn had just come into Capricorn, and we could have got into that, and also that Sirius was really obvious, or what a really bright star, which I presume to be Sirius. But yeah, there's a lot going on with his stuff, so you'll be able to hear that in the conversation. So to start off with, you know, you and I have had conversations in the past where I feel like, personally, I have a tendency to overread things.
Mm.
And I feel like I see a lot of things within your work that I find fascinating.
Oh, thank you.
That I enjoy, aside from the music.
Thank you.
I feel that there are elements of things that interest me, that I have interest in, rather. And it's an interesting one because I feel like a lot of people probably take what you do at face value in a very, just they see the surface, and that's fine, I think, right?
Oh, yeah. I try to make the first level of encounter as appealing as possible, with the realization that some folks might stay there and not desire going any deeper or further beyond that. So it has to hold up on that initial level as well.
Yeah.
But hey, if someone wants to go in and explore more, I want to be ready for that. And ideally, I mean, the goal, and it is a lofty goal, and I'm not saying that I've achieved it, but the hope is that you can go as far as someone wants to go with them into the full experience of being alive, and to have your work be an entry point into that ultimate exploration, which I think it's up to the other person for sure. I mean, you're interested in things, and I wouldn't describe that as overthinking. I mean, it's better than underthinking.
Yeah.
In my opinion, and I relate to that, and I want to be able to offer that to that person who is quite thoughtful or interested in looking for more than meets the eye. I am too, so
yeah.
Thank you for approaching this with that kind of mindset.
Yeah, because I don't know whether it's pareidolia on my part. You know, when you see things, it's like, you know, looking at wood grain and seeing things in it that brings shapes and images to mind, or whether I'm actually looking into the wood grain and seeing what's in there deliberately.
Well, that's always one of the big puzzles, I think. Yeah. How much influence do we have over what we perceive?
Yeah.
How much can we will ourselves into our perceptions, or to see what we want to see? And to some extent, no one can deny that we have a lot of impact on our observations, because there's too much to see. There's actually too much to experience. So we have to make choices as to what we pay attention to. And so in that way, I guess, seek and ye shall find. Just be careful what you're looking for, because you'll find it one way or the other.
Yeah, true enough. So with that in mind, obviously the first thing that made its way out prior to any music from this album was the album cover, which is stunning.
Oh, thank you.
I was aware of Boris's work because I was that kid that used to read like heavy metal and was obsessed with fantasy art and comics. But I didn't know that he worked in tandem with Julie Bell.
Yeah, his wife. And
yeah,
they're really a fantasy art power couple. They paint together. And that's quite rare for in general. I think painting is appropriately thought of as a solitary endeavor. Hmm. But they do it very well together and have a complementary style, certainly. And I think she would say that he influenced her. But I think at this point, she also influences him. And that to see them work and get to work with them was quite inspiring. Master artist. So I got to give them credit for the quality of the painting, of course.
Yeah. But to me, it looks very, again, this may be me reading into it, but it seems to me that it's been very directed on your part. Like there's symbolism within it that I'd like to talk about, if that's cool.
Sure.
So
I'll do my best.
Yeah, exactly. This may just be me reading too much into it. But obviously the first thing that jumps out, aside from it being this amazing portrait of yourself, is the setting.
Yes.
And I wondered if it was a real place or if it was just a symbol.
It's a combination of real places and perfected places, I suppose. So I wanted it to be outside in a neighborhood, but ideally make it a neighborhood that could be found in almost any part of the world, maybe at least the Western world. To have a familiarity, but almost an archetypal kind of familiarity, that allowed people to instantly relate to the place without having to do much studying of it, to be immersed in the atmosphere of this nighttime neighborhood street with houses and a car and some trees and lawns and the gutter and the mailboxes and things like that. I think there's a mailbox in there. See, even if there isn't, I feel as though there is.
Yeah.
And it's a type of environment I've always had a strong feeling about, the nighttime in general, but being in a neighborhood at night, I guess just growing up, but to this day, you're drawn to these certain kinds of feelings and locations, and you're not quite sure why, but as actually Boris and Julie said, it's speaking to you for some reason, and so you feel obligated or responsible to listen to it and to respond to it in some sense and to put it into your work. So as you can imagine, there's a combination of deep thought and planning and intention, and then there's also a complete disregard and turning oneself over to these instincts or these impulses, these intuitions, almost like a craving, and you can't explain it. So if someone asked me, well, why the nighttime street, I might be able to make up some reason, but I actually don't really know why. It's what I was told to do by that vision.
Yeah. Okay. Because to me, it's like there's so many elements in there. So for a start, I mean, it's a cul-de-sac of this suburban area, which feels very, I mean, a cul-de-sac instantly feels like a dead end. Well, it is a dead end, right?
Well, I hadn't then thought it maybe that it was a cul-de-sac, but I like that idea. This is one of the great things about someone else
exactly.
having their
this
ideas.
Is,
it's even better than I thought it was.
It's me reading too much into it.
No, you're reading more into it than I had given it credit for. So yeah, it's a dead-end street.
Yeah,
and I didn't know it was, but you saw around the corner of the
that's
behind the tree and knew there was no more road there. I just assumed the road continued on, but you picked up on this underlying feeling of a cul-de-sac. That's great.
Okay, yeah, but maybe that says a lot about me.
No, I'm saying I'm committing to it. I'm going with it, and okay. I'm going to take from now on. If people ask, I'm going to say yeah, it's a dead end street.
Because it's the thing about it is obviously that there's the. The sort of serpent,
yeah,
the snake, right?
That yep.
So yes. it's like, but it's half, it's only half visible. So it's like you're the person that's noticing this thing that exists within that world, which feels very mundane.
There's yes, and it's not clear, perhaps, if it's actually there or not, and it's also not entirely clear if it just is a snake. Because it was very important, for example, when I was talking about that part of the painting with Boris and Julie, Boris was very adamant about it not being just a snake. He said, yeah. I want it to have dragon-like features too. And of course, if someone studies both of their work, they'll see many fantastic creatures
yeah.
that don't necessarily exist in what we would call nature. But they exist. You know, a dragon exists, whether you can go and see one in a zoo or in the wild, a dragon exists as a phenomenon, as an idea. So he wanted that. And I, actually, at first, I had doubts. But I quieted those and try to remove my own hesitation and my own tastes and things sometimes and let it be what it's supposed to be. And then I was completely ecstatic about how it turned out and how, specifically because it was less of a snake, it was less easy to compartmentalize into what kind of creature it was, or even if it was real. You know,
yeah.
maybe I was imagining it in the painting.
Yeah, because it still encompasses all those.
I'm looking up the painting now, and I suppose I could see the way the final house, the bluish house, the way it's positioned on the road does give the impression that it might even go across
yeah.
the street.
Oh, maybe.
And that's, but it's ambiguous.
Yeah,
to the extent that it can be, like you said, interpreted, and to you it read as, oh, well, that's obviously a dead end, and to someone else it might read as, oh, well, the road goes on.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. This it represents both things, doesn't it? Because it's
that's the hope.
Yeah,
that's the hope. Both things, and both things in that real stark contrast. Those pairs of. Is it a dead end or is it a continuation? Is it this side or is it that side? Is it light or is it dark?
Hmm.
So it's not, it's those pairs of opposites which are so powerful, right? Those polarities. And they seem to assert themselves. They seem to want to be present.
And acknowledged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe someone only sees one side of it, but you can easily see, I mean, even the title. None of this was conscious. But even the title, at first I was really not, I didn't like the title. I thought it was very, this title, You're Not Alone, I thought was rather generic, which I suppose it is. But I thought it was a bit too comforting for some of the feelings that I was having. It was too hopeful. But at the same time, while it's obvious that You're Not Alone can be a sign of support and camaraderie and solidarity and a reaching out in loneliness, there are times when you might very well want to be alone.
Mm.
And if someone said to you, for example, if you were had gone to sleep in your bedroom in an empty house by yourself, and a voice whispered from the corner, you're not alone, that could be quite disconcerting
yeah.
and quite ominous and quite dark and not a positive feeling. The feeling that something is there can be beautiful or it can be quite disturbing. So yeah, there's these these contrasting but equally true aspects of almost every theme in this work has become quite striking to me and consistent.
Yeah, definitely.
Also confusing.
Because that's the other thing, that saying about things being confusing is the sense that the person in the background looking out the window that looks almost like they're shouting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you, right?
Well, I can say
or
this.
Or a version of you?
Well, when we made the painting, initially that detail wasn't in there. And as we continued working, I asked to put a figure in the window.
Yeah.
And I didn't specify. I did a sketch of what I wanted it to look like. But and to be honest, between you and me, I did draw it in my head that this was me.
Yeah.
But I didn't tell them that. I said, I just want a figure there. And they somewhat disregarded the figure as I sketched it in terms of the way the body was. I had sort of one arm resting on the window pane and looking out in this with this different kind of a much more subdued attitude. Hmm. And they actually used one of the photos that we had taken for reference when we first began working on the project, where I was screaming at the sky.
Yeah.
And used that out of all their all the bodies they could have mimicked it on. Because I didn't tell them it was me, and I certainly would have imagined they would use that more dramatic pose to put in there, but they did. And then, of course, it was, again, even better than I would have dared to dream.
Yeah. So who did you see the figure as? And if you were just... Because you say that when you sent the sketch, it was you as... Well, you intended it to be you.
Yeah, but not for a clear understanding as to why...
Yeah,
and part of me hesitates to talk about these things, not out of fear or even fear of revealing too much. It's that I don't really know, and I'm kind of making it up as much as you might think you're making it up when you look at it.
Yeah,
I had a hand in bringing this about, but at times I didn't even know what it was that I was bringing about. It was like assembling a puzzle, where all you know is you're fitting pieces together, and occasionally. Maybe you're even just looking at the back of the puzzle where there's no picture, and it's not until it's assembled and you flip it over that you see, oh, wow, all along I was putting together a puzzle of this this young horse running across a field, but you had no idea. You were just fitting these shapes together and doing your best to complete it. And then you can look at it and have your own thoughts on it, but my thoughts are as valid or invalid as, I suppose, anyone else's.
Do you think?
Maybe. Well, I could say the figure in the window, there's a hazy, almost like the kind of recollections you have from childhood that are almost memories of memories.
Yeah.
You're remembering, you hold on to these sensory experiences and you hold on to ways that you felt and you might have attached them to a certain visual encounter. And then you remember that memory, and you're remembering a reflection eventually. So you get these. So you get quite blurry, but it's a beautiful kind of blurry, like a fire glow. If you're sitting around a fire and you can't see quite to the edges of the space you're in, but some things are illuminated and there's shadows cast, and it's an appealing kind of haziness. Maybe you wouldn't want to see everything too clearly in there. And in that kind of way, I could say, yeah, so that's me looking out at myself from this home or this house where things are safe and secure, and then standing in between on the road, which is a path of sorts, or it's supposed to take you somewhere, you know, maybe away from this home or this house, or maybe back to it.
Like the journey of the major arcana in the tarot.
Maybe so, yeah. Or maybe not. You know, it does seem that there's so many beautiful systems which attempt to illustrate and give access to these core, almost unknowable truths, right?
Yeah.
And so we're trying to help ourselves interact with these really subtle but very strong I guess they're somewhat elusive, but they're powerful. I don't know why they're elusive, or maybe they're not elusive. They're actually maybe they're so present that we kind of can't see them because we're so immersed in it, right? So we get distance and perspective by designing ways to illustrate them and ways to tell ourselves stories about these feelings, and maybe even music itself is perhaps the best way to give shape or texture to feeling, but feeling not as a kind of trifling emotion or a passing thought, but feeling as the foundation of experience, feeling as the one sure aspect of our day-to-day life that we can't deny. The thoughts kind of come and go, but it's the physical reality of being a body, being in a body and being here and going through this experience that seems to underlie all these other ways of looking at it. But see, this is why maybe I shouldn't talk about it, because I start to ramble and it starts to blow apart, you know. Well, and it's easy to say, like, oh yeah, there's all kinds of stuff going on in there, but that doesn't mean it's going to be compelling work, you know what I mean?
No, I understand that, but I think that's one of the things that I enjoy about your work, is that I feel that those things are referencing that. You know, there's loads of stuff in the lyrics that we'll get to in a bit, but I mean, this is just the very start of it, as that was just the first thing that came out.
Well, I would like for anyone who encounters the album cover to be able to look at it and say, hey, this is an awesome painting. Yeah. I just like that. And then someone else could say, huh, I wonder why he's looking at that creature with that particular expression on his face. And again, I mean, I got to really hand it to these artists for, it's very hard to paint an expression.
Yeah.
And there's, when I was, I sort of, I worked very hard on, I'd say, finalizing the painting and bringing out details and just really pulling it all together, making some final changes, which they were all very, Boris and Julie were very kind in allowing me to do that. Yeah. But I really marveled at the expression that's on the face, because it looks more like me than a photograph does, which is what a painting's supposed to be. There's more spirit in the painting than even in a photograph, maybe even in the person in reality. And in that expression, looking at that creature, there's, I think, a type of courage. There's a type of false courage or bravado, you know, a desire to appear strong in the face of this threat. There's skepticism, even maybe cynicism. There's a small amount of confidence, but there also looks like it's probably overcompensating for insecurity. I mean, but this is me also projecting into that.
But that feels more valid if you're the person that's responsible for the work.
Well, I suppose so. Yeah, so you could look at all those things and say, well, why is the serpent on that side of the street instead of the other side? And why is he looking to that direction, you know, versus the other direction? And all these things, and, you know, how are other things composed? But what's most exciting, and I really, for me, this is what keeps me excited, is none of it was, as much as there were choices being made, you're being led by emotion and this craving. That's the only way I was trying to think of how to describe this earlier. It's not, so many people have, I remember hearing when people would talk about making their artwork or their music, that it was an expression of themselves, and I had to express this. And I really had a hard time relating to that, because what I felt inside, I didn't want to express. I didn't want to feel. I didn't feel good. More Why would I want to express feeling lousy?
Yeah, like a compulsion more than an expression.
Yeah, I wanted to feel better. I wanted to feel a different way. I wanted to feel awesome. So I wanted something aspirational.
Yeah.
I wanted to make, it was like a fantasizing. I wanted to make a song that made me feel better than I was. I wanted to reach out of myself to something more. So you have this craving, but it is coming from within you. Like you said, it's a compulsive feeling. I have to get this out. I have to do this thing. But in the reaching out or the pushing out from within you of this idea you have or this vision you have that doesn't even feel like it's yours because it's just sort of came to you, you also are reaching out into the world, and you also are finding something deeper inside yourself. So you're going both directions at once. You're kind of pushing out and reaching further in or something.
No, that makes perfect sense. Well, that's the thing. Do you think it's solely from within as well, or do you think that... See, I have the opinion that making art of any type, be it visual art or music or poetry or dance, whatever, is you're as much a conduit as you are to those... But, you know, you can say it's like people will talk about their muse and about creativity as this thing that exists within them. But I personally think there's much more to it than that. And I think what you've been describing to me, that sounds to me like how I feel about those things, that there is this world of existence that is beyond... So, we obviously experience things within the realm of the senses.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to say that TV shows don't exist just because a TV's not tuned in or a radio's not tuned in. There's no radio broadcast. You know, these things are all around us. We it's easy to quantify those things within science for things that we like to just happily take as a truth, right?
Mm.
Like, everyone knows that they can turn the Wi-Fi on their phone and get online because there is a Wi-Fi signal somewhere invariably. But I don't know. I feel that when you make art, you are you're allowing things to happen, and I think that's the beautiful thing that when you're describing that when you were directing the artwork, for example, and in their case as well, when they were actually making the painting, it sounds like that there was a beautiful synergy where everybody was being very intuitive about it, and I think that that's because they're. You know, that all depends on whether or not you believe there is a guiding hand in things. Which I think I think you do believe that personally, because the what I see in your work, that they're the things that really resonate with me. But again, like, as I said, this could just be me.
Well, it's
wishful thinking.
It's beautiful to be someone such as yourself who is able to look at the world and find that because it's what you want to see. And I really think that's extraordinarily valuable and admirable and really is the goal in one way to experience the world as you wish it was. I mean, what a beautiful thing to do. And to not say that you're not still skeptical and to not have questioning, but to allow this kind of possibility that is beautiful ultimately and does seem, in my opinion, I agree with you, does seem to explain a great deal of what is most beautiful about life in a way that is hopeful and gives a sense of purpose. I completely agree in terms of based on my experiences that there's something is going on and it's not actually even that important. In fact, it might even be disrespectful for me to want to figure out what it is.
Yeah.
It's almost like a waste of energy. Mm. It's best just to serve it. And to kind of not question it beyond that. And it almost seems if you try to pin it down too much or get a grasp on it, it slips away.
Yeah.
It's quite tricky in that way. But I think a helpful method that I've used to approach that phenomenon of a guiding hand or an outside force or an inner force or something beyond you that you're engaging with is that it comes to you as what we would call an instinct or an intuition or an emotion or a dream. But so often dreams are described as this idea that you come up with, right? That you think, well, what do I want and what do I like? And I'm going to sort of combine those elements into a goal and I'm going to call that my dream and I'm going to make it happen and I'm going to work and I'm going to push and I'm going to do whatever it takes by whatever means necessary to get what I want. But sometimes, and we may have talked to this, we probably did talk about this before, it started to seem, I've tried that, and I usually didn't have very good success with that. And it seems more like with a vision, the vision dreams up you. The dream dreams you and pulls you towards it. You don't come up with the dream and push towards it. It's already there. And now it says to you, okay, well, here's what you have to do, and here's what I'm asking you to do as your vision. do you have what it takes? Can you set yourself aside and do what I want you to do, to do what perhaps you're meant to do? And it can be quite humiliating too, because you're not in control in the same way. You can't take credit for it the same way. You can't say, well, I did this, then I did this, and I put two and two together, and I got four. It's going to surprise you and shock you and challenge you and oftentimes, if not all times, be entirely irrational and quite painful. And I just try to, especially lately, take even further extreme measures with Trevor Eve to listen to what I'm being told to do and do it. Sometimes against my own, I guess, more shallow instincts, day-to-day instincts.
Yeah.
And it's been painful and it's been challenging in ways that I wouldn't expect, but it's so clear. And the part that I guess was quite liberating more recently is I used to have those instincts and have those feelings and say, this is what I should do. But I would always feel like I had to explain it. I had to justify it. I had to be able to explain it to someone else. I had to understand it. And I just say, I don't know why. I can't explain it. I don't understand, but this is what I'm supposed to do. And then I just do it.
Yeah.
And that's been liberating.
Yeah.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But do you find that, as well as it being liberating and gratifying, do you find that there is... the end is that much more forthcoming when you act that way?
In the sense the better results?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, I'll have to see, because we'll find out later.
Exactly.
So far, so good, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it's easy to say now. I mean, there is a level of common sense and decorum and general... say honorability that I want to maintain, and that's where things can get tricky, because if the voice tells you to go murder somebody, you know, then you probably could doubt that voice, and it will. I think it does test you and try to trick you in these ways, but,
yeah.
You know, that's why it's never that easy. It's never black and white. Unfortunately, it's always hovering between these spaces, which yeah. keeps it alive ultimately, and that certainly does keep it challenging.
Yeah. Well, so it's interesting that you were saying about the polarity and the constant push and pull, and as you've now said, the space between those polarities and what that can mean. So for me, the album, aside from being, you know, if we're going to cut it down to like buzzwords, like it feels very triumphant.
Oh,
it feels very empowering.
That's fantastic to hear that.
And I think the spoken word passages, yeah.
Yeah, the motivational speeches.
Yeah. I got chills the first time when listening to the record, because
That's the highest compliment.
Well, it clarifies the direction, right?
I suppose.
But it feels like, from an outside perspective, it feels like there's like an overarching theme to the record.
Yeah, amazingly enough, that it turned out that way. Never dreamed it would. That's what was most surprising.
Yeah. It feels like, on one level, it feels like almost like... it's clearly about you, but if we would step outside of that, it feels almost like, and I don't mean this to sound horrible, but it almost feels like a stage play in a sense, because it feels like the heroes, like in a very Joseph Campbell sense. Like, it's like, you know, it's the dark night of the soul. It's like these series of tribulations which are unspecified, but and coming out the other side of that. And it's almost like, and there's moments where, sorry, I'm going to have to refer to my notes because I'm terrible at recalling lyrics. But the things, yeah. So just picking through the lyrics, these are the things that jumped out at me immediately and that seemed to reference what I think is this journey that I was just saying about, like in party mindset. And it's like time in oblivion's well spent. And then there's obviously beyond oblivion.
Oh, yeah. See, I didn't even notice that.
And then...
I didn't even notice I used that word
And then
twice.
Never Again, you say, like, I learned a lot from my trip to the dark side. Even in You're Not Alone, when it says, into the great unknown. But that could be... For me, that's the unknown on the other side of this dark space, oblivion or the abyss or Darth or whatever, however you want to view it, right? And that's... If we're going to read too much into it, which I am prone to do... If you want to say it as the hero's quest or the quest for enlightenment, there is that moment. There's that, you know, of total oblivion, of like destruction of the ego and you know, facing Karanzan and coming out the other side of those things as a reborn person, right? As a better person.
Yeah, if you can make it back out.
Yeah.
Sometimes you wonder when you think you've gone in to the abyss. And you think, oh, great, I got that out of the way. And you haven't even taken the first step to approaching the entry to your real test. So, and you can have many versions of venturing into the darkest moment. I don't know that it's just one journey. It's humbling when you went to do that, I think, because I think we all, no matter how much humility you have, there's that part of the ego that likes to think, okay, I'm doing this, I'm actually on the right path, and I've been through that challenge and I made it out, so I must be on the other side now. And odds are, you know, I'm not saying that there aren't those who have done it. I mean, for all we know, the abyss is when you die.
Yeah.
That's when you go in. Now, some have said that they have done it in living life. And I'm not here to say they haven't, but maybe once they died, they were perplexed to find that it only was just starting. It seems like, I mean, just your observations, as I truly hadn't even realized that the lyrics in the song Party Mindset, referring to oblivion, are then referred to in the title of the instrumental song Beyond Oblivion in a quite striking way now. I mean, it seems so intentional, but it was completely a fluke. Completely a fluke. I mean, obviously it was on some kind of subconscious level. Yeah. And I think that, I suppose that these are the results you get. Not saying they're great results, but you do get results when you turn yourself over to a kind of intuitive decision-making or irrational creative process. I mean, some of these songs I've been working on for 12 years, and there was just no way to approach this album conceptually. I think that the timeless story that you've been describing, the only story, the journey of the human experience, asserts itself when given that space.
We're within it, so therefore we're within...
It's all we could do. Yeah. We're trapped. I mean, maybe that's one of the hallmarks of so much of our frustration is wishing we could, that it could be about something else, that we'd find something that somehow alluded to something beyond that. And there is. I think there is something beyond that story, but we haven't earned the right to get there until we complete this growing process, right?
Yeah.
This educational process of living in this version of reality.
Yeah.
I don't like to use that word so much, but...
It's something I heard recently, which really, really struck a chord with me, is the set is obviously as we walk through the valley of the shadow of death. I mean, that's life, isn't it? Life is that valley, and we are constantly in the shadow of death.
Well said.
Which is a beautiful thing. But yeah, it
So yeah, these are the things that really jumped out to me.
And again, it delights me that you're finding what I consider really exciting points of view that not only I had not considered, but hadn't even, I don't think I would have found them if you had not pointed them out right now. That counts. That's a really incredible part. And this has been said many times, but it really is true that this is still part of the album being made. You know, you looking at the album changes the album. You listening to the album changes the album. You encountering a work is still part of that work coming into being. And it's still, I mean, people say that once it's released, it's still, that's when it starts, or that's when it comes to life, or that's only the, my work is done, and then it becomes everybody else's. But it really is, and you can learn a lot from other people's takes on what you've gotten to do and realize that it's just as valid, or again, even more valid. You know, it's still happening. And hopefully, again, at the very least, or on another, in another way, it can just be what you said, hopefully very thrilling, triumphant, and intense rock music.
Yeah,
which
it is.
Yeah, and it doesn't need any to be anything more, or has to be able to stand up as that. I think that's important. And I can imagine someone hearing us carry on about these other things that we just happen to be interested in general, and say, "Oh, well, that you're just trying to make the music more interesting than it is."
But well, no, because it doesn't, this is me saying that.
Well, I like these things too, though.
But yeah, that, I get that.
The music doesn't have to be the interesting. The music just needs to feel really powerful. Hopefully, you know that.
Yeah.
And
makes people want to drive too fast.
Yes, exactly. But I do think that even if someone isn't aware or interested in these other ideas in a very literal sense or in a conscious sense, I think they are picking up a part of those feelings are coming from these aspects. And if you watch a Disney movie like Pinocchio and you enjoy this story for all that it presents itself as on an approachable level as a four-year-old child, it holds up and counts as that. And it doesn't matter if you can pick apart the symbolism or interpret it on these other levels. The truth is, if you get a feeling from it, it's because you already are on an intuitive, subconscious, almost primal level, understanding those things, even though you don't know that you understand them.
Yeah,
it's an incredible kind of inherited wisdom that I'm sure is somehow genetic, but actually transcends even our understandings of the mind and biology and how thoughts are passed down and how much of a kind of template of consciousness someone is born with. When you react strongly to something, especially as a child, when you have such limited experience and in intellectual knowledge, that's the surest sign that there's something intangible at play in the heart of the human experience.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that that's the other part of people's journeys, isn't it? When people are actually aware of those things and they become the seeker to try and find out ways of, like as you said, maybe the best thing is to not understand those things, just to accept them and not give in to them, but just to flow with them,
to love them.
Yeah,
I think that's the key. I mean, we love this feeling.
Yeah.
And much like love is sort of indescribable past a certain point, that's what they say, that the pinnacle of love is love of God. And if God is synonymous with reality and life, I mean, it's sort of being in love with this feeling of being alive, the things that stimulate you, the things that make you excited to be able to live another day, that compulsion, that curiosity, the joy of life that is indescribable. Joy is happiness without reason, that transcends reason. It's the joy of having come into being. And maybe I think we could both agree that enlightenment is simply the recognition of that phenomenon to some extent. It's not this striving towards some kind of almost unattainable wisdom of secrets. It's the realization that what's already going on is fantastic and you're paying attention to it.
Yeah.
You know, just a quick shift of perspective.
Yeah.
I think in Confusion and Clarity, you say that perfectly. You know, the parts of life that bring us undeniable and reliable joys, these are sacred.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wrote those very quickly. Essentially, I spoke them. I recorded them, and then listened back, and which was quite painful to do. And then wrote down the best parts and then recorded them again. But it was those were recorded, the motivational speeches. There's three of them on the album. They're all very brief. I mean, not much longer than a minute at that. And they were recorded so last minute that we were actually in the mastering phase of the project. So after all the album recording, after all the mixing, on the mastering, the last day,
yeah,
said, okay, let's get these done. Because I really hesitated.
You knew that they were going to be there.
I think I was putting it off as long as I possibly could put it off.
Why?
Well, it was just very exposed, and I was very unsure of it. That was the biggest challenge for my ego and my conception of me and my ideas and my tastes. I would never have wanted to do that. That was suggested by a woman, Karen Glauber, who I work with as in my management company. And as soon as she said it, I knew she was right, and I knew that I was going to have to succumb to this idea, and this was going to be the most challenging idea for me to succumb to.
Why do you think it's easier to say those things? Because you say it constantly throughout the album, I think, but why do you think it's easier to say within music? Do you think because there's a brashness to it and it's like a shield?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. You just have the power of the entire universe, it feels like.
Yeah.
The way I try to make this music, I use every sound that I can to build this cathedral of strength, you know, this triumphant, intense feeling. So to have the polar opposite of that, where it's just me, and I had to hold back from wanting to put any other sounds or effects or anything. It's just a naked, really naked voice. But I understood that I had to do it, that it was what was supposed to happen, and I had to, you know, cancel out myself and just do it. And that's an intense feeling. It's a good feeling ultimately, but I haven't listened back to it since. Once I could stop listening to those, I skipped those.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You know, it's not about me. It's about what I'm supposed to do here.
Yeah.
But thank you for your kind words about them. I mean, what also helped is I thought if I really liked someone's music or someone's work, would I want to hear them talking about these things? And the answer was yes.
Yeah.
And I would appreciate that they had the courage to do that. So that's how I kind of thought of it in a more objective way.
I agree. That's why I love doing these. Because invariably, I get to sit with people that I find inspiring and have conversations with them about their work. But invariably, it's about the reason the work is the way it is, right? I don't think there's been anyone that I've spoken to on this. I mean, maybe it's just because... I hope it's not because I'm enforcing what I see within the conversation. Or it's just the case of, like, I see things within certain people's work and I really want to speak to them about that. But those people agree that there is this, as we've been discussing.
You relate, yeah. Well, yeah. It's probably a combination of all those things going on.
Yeah. I think the most obvious thing as far as the lyrics go in the single is the give me the will to love so below and as above.
Mm.
I mean that spells out so clearly for me in a sense that as soon as I see the words will and love together, I'm always going to assume that within a certain framework anyway.
Yeah, and that's appropriate. But fortunately, those words exist beyond that.
Of course.
Or beneath it, you know.
Yeah.
Before it and after it.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, that's when I've listened, I think music, not necessarily my own music, but music as a phenomenon, it's me at my best. When I'm listening to music, it gives me that joyful feeling, and the only music I would choose to listen to is music that does, even if it's angry music or you know, it can be all different tones and timbres. I can feel it making me a better person, you know, and truly better, like improving my character. Hmm. And one of the things it does, if I'm in a very spiteful, resentful mood, full of contempt for the world in general or specific people or just that kind of malevolent rage, once that music's on, those feelings fall away. And it's not that it makes me feel more loving. It's the other stuff falls away, and what's revealed and what was there all along is this unconditional loving feeling, just a general goodwill towards people. But I don't know that I've yet found the strength to let those other parts fall away when they're not useful. But music gives me this power to be better, you know, yeah. to let the what I hope is the real me come to the fore.
It's alchemical.
I think so. And that's with the real puzzle, because if you didn't have, you know, the lesser stuff to start with, what would be the fun of turning it into something greater?
Yeah.
So I'm also thankful for those darker motivations, because I would never have been compelled to do any of this, I don't think, had I not felt so at such a loss. I had to do something. I was desperate.
Yeah.
And that's how this album came to. I was feeling just complete. I was feeling more and more alienated from everything. And that I had to feel, you know, it's so strange too how the title came along, because the title was very last second. It was also, again, suggested by one of my managers. And I realized that he suggested that title was out of the blue. And that title, I realized, appeared as a lyric in that last song. Hmm. And that last song, I had been sort of holding off and wasn't sure if I should put on the album, even though at times it had been one of my favorite ones that I was working on. And I said, wow, it's amazing that you suggested You're Not Alone, because that happens to be kind of one of the main lyrics that really sings out in this one song. I guess that song should be on the album now, and now it'll be the title track. But I had been feeling not a sense of loneliness, but a sense of disembodiment and disconnection, that
like a melancholia.
Yeah, or a frustration that I felt like I was insane for believing in this feeling. I was starting to think, what's wrong with me that this feeling means so much to me and is the driving purpose in my life, and I can't find more people that I wanted to connect with people. Hmm. I wanted even one other person to say, I understand exactly what you're talking about. That's the feeling I'm looking for too. Hmm. And thank goodness that we found each other and found each other in our efforts to be around that feeling, to create that feeling, to worship that feeling. But I was probably experiencing a deficit of that feeling myself, which is also why I had a harder time relating to people. So just working on the album with the focus being to make this life force feeling come out of it, that was the goal. And then that was my only personal goal. And all the stuff, like the lyrics and the different textures, they just sort of made their way after the fact. I just had to be motivated enough to do it through this kind of furious... I felt like it was like my last chance. Because I'd been trying to make an album for so long and started to think that maybe it would never happen. I mean, 10 years had passed so quickly, and I never intended for there to be that kind of delay. And I realized, holy smokes, in another 10 years, I'll be almost 50. And then life's going to be come to a close. And you can start to see that.
Yeah.
And that there's an urgency. You got to do this. And it was definitely never had made an effort to record or make music with that kind of urgency before, and that kind of desperation. But it was a good thing.
How do you think that's, it's informed the record clearly throughout the whole thing, you can feel that. But do you think that's made for a better record, in your opinion?
I don't know, you just start
to judge, isn't it?
I started to realize that all these ideas I had, you know, for a certain melody or a chord change, or the way I wanted a song to start, or how this song I'd been working on since 2006 could have this part in it. And you start to forget that this is just all in your head. No one else has heard these things. And you start to think, oh, yeah, people, this is what I do. And no one else, you haven't done it. You know, it's just ideas. They're just plans you have and just that you keep. I wasn't even intending to put them off. It's just you start to realize, well, holy smokes, no one else except you has any idea that any of this stuff exists, because it's just existing in your imagination, and it's time to manifest it. So
yeah,
I would like it to be the beginning of a much more prolific and productive era.
What was that?
I don't know. It sounded like a little audio
sounded like
clip.
My phone, right?
Or something. It sounded like someone had been listening and then hung up. You notice that?
Yeah.
They'd heard enough. They said, that's it.
These guys are good. We're done.
Yeah, tap out.
Yeah.
They're not talking about anything important.
That's funny. See, this brings me back to my whole thing at the start about how, you know, you can appreciate things on different levels.
And I think that's...
The lead of it or the gold of it.
I think it's quite noble to aspire to that, and quite challenging.
Yeah.
Because we're really, most people, including myself, are prone to opinions first and examination later, and judgment. And
do you find that you're judged in that sense? I think you're judged unfairly.
Because I can't complain.
Because I think people are like, oh yeah, partying.
But that is what it is.
It is what it is. But that's the tip of the mountain, and or the iceberg rather, and there's so much more below the surface.
Well,
so
to you there is.
Yeah.
And I'm exactly. thankful, and then for you I'm thankful.
So, as we're being listened in on, that was weird.
There's something going on.
Would you? I had one. This is probably the only question I have, because it's not. This has just been a conversation rather than a series of questions, I hope. But I think I know the answer already. But do you consider like partying as a spiritual praxis?
Well, that's there's a lot of questions within that question, I suppose, because...
That's why I only needed one.
Yeah, that's the whole discussion right there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we've answered that, right? Or would you care to...
Well, it depends on how one looks at what spirituality is or what spirit is. It's nice, actually, to talk about at the end or towards the end of this talk, because... Everything we've been talking about is spirit. I mean, that, and that's funny, because that's the one word I didn't really use, but that seems to sum up that intuition and those and instincts and emotion. Those are the manifestations of the spirit, right? So if one is to develop a worldview, it seems that the most... appropriate way to build it is from out of the spirit, and then let the mind serve that, you know, and the heart too, because you're also trying to listen to your heart. These all, I don't think they're all the same thing, but they're different aspects of a core power, the life force power, and that's what you want to lead with. And the mind will tell you that it is the answer to everything, and it's the life force power, and it's in control of the life force, but it can't be, because it's been made of the life force. So yeah, you want to turn its unique and very formidable skills over to something it's worthy of serving, rather than its nonsense games and irritating distractions, you know. Let it serve the celebration of existence. And that's what partying was just supposed to be, like you said. It was supposed to be an entry point, a really appealing, really easy to understand and grasp, and hopefully very joyous, very fun way to get into everything else. So this is my particular tool set, my particular offering, my way of saying, okay, well, if you want to explore life, here's the way I can go about it with you. We can get into all the same fundamental stuff, but we're going to do it through this idea of partying, and hopefully that appeals to you. Hopefully you like this idea of having fun, which most people do. So I was trying to think of the most appealing possible framework I could put all this other stuff into. But even that, of course, it's easy to say that in hindsight. I mean, that was all quite intuitive as well. I mean, just was drawn to these certain aesthetics and tried to explain it to myself, but I feel less and less the need to explain it past a certain point. The more I explain it, kind of the less interesting it gets to me, or the less fun it gets. You want to be surprised. You want to be mystified by your own life.
Yeah.
Right? You want to be, if you're entertaining other people, you got to be entertained by what you're doing too. And it's hard to be entertained if you know all the tricks.
Yeah.
You got to be surprised by the magic tricks that are being played on you by your own life.
That's a great point to finish.
Well, thank you for your thoughtful insights and superior interpretations.
I don't know about that.
Well, in my opinion.
Thank you. Thanks,
mate. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks for listening to Someone Who Isn't Me, episode 23 with Andrew WK. I should point out that towards the end there was this weird thing that happened where we were doing the interview. There was this strange sound, like a clicking, as if somebody hung up like an old-fashioned telephone, like a line had just been cut. And it was really audible. And I've listened back to it on the podcast when I was editing audio levels, and you can hear a click, but when we were actually in the room and doing it, it was a lot more startling, and it threw us both. And yet at the same time, it didn't really surprise me that much. And I already have a theory on what it was, but there you go. I hope you enjoyed the episode. It seemed to confirm a lot of feelings that I had about what was going on with his work and with Andrew himself. He's a true artist, and I don't think that's appreciated as much as it should be. Go and get the new album, which is called You're Not Alone. It's fantastic. I get hyped every time I listen to it. It's brilliant. Anyway, I hope it gives you another slightly different perspective when you listen to his music, because, like I said, that's how I feel about it now, especially. The next episode of Swim is going to be with Cedric Bixler-Zavala. I know that was going to be this one, but it just seemed that this aligned better on for the 23rd episode, and his album being out on the 2nd or the 3rd, and me being into numbers and etc. So yeah, thank you to Andrew for doing this episode. Thank you also to Julie for sorting this out and making it happen. Also Tony as well, thanks for that. So I hope you enjoyed it. Please leave a nice review on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you use. 5-star reviews and ratings, etc., go a long way. You can find Andrew online on Instagram and Twitter at AndrewWK. As I said, the album You're Not Alone is out now. You should go check it out. You should buy it or listen online on all the streaming platforms. It's a brilliant piece of work. You can find me online at Daniel P. Carter on Instagram and Twitter. The podcast is Swim Podcast on Insta and Twitter as well. Thanks very much. Spread the love. Peace.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.